TalkZone.com!
Alright, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
The name's Adam Weber, and I see that you buy baseball cards.
How much you want for this Mickey Mantle rookie season?
I was hoping to sell all of the cards.
TalkZone presents the Fan Cave Radio Show with your host, Tom Morgan.
This guy's unbelievable.
Featuring Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune and Dave Hoekstra of the Chicago Sun-Times. Sponsored by HoosierBat.com.
Wait, I'll make you a deal. I will give you a Rogers Hornsby if you take me to the hotel.
The show that can change your life.
Rogers Hornsby?
Just let your wife find out you're listening to a sports and memorabilia show on the internet.
Rogers Hornsby's worth like $4,000.
So I got two of them, and this many Larry Yogi Berras.
Sit back, relax, and learn a thing or two. It's the Fan Cave Radio Show on TalkZone.com.
Let's go to work.
Welcome to the Fan Cave Radio Show. I'm Tom Morgan with Phil Rogers of the Chicago Tribune, Dave Hoekstra of the Chicago Sun-Times, and our producer, Dave Olson. We're on every Wednesday morning live from 8 to 9 a.m. Central Time. And you can hear rebroadcasts anytime 24/7 on TalkZone.com. I'm just going to do a little tweet here. I'm T Crown Tom on Twitter. I'm going to be doing a little tweet here, letting people know what we're talking about today on the show. One of the things, I talked to 8 of the leading auction houses in the country for sports collectibles, and I found out what they thought that Derek Jeter 3,000th hit home run ball would have been worth in an auction if the guy who caught the ball hadn't returned it to the Yankees. So we'll talk about that later in the show. But let's start out, Dave, talking about the All-Star game last night. You were saying, Phil Rogers had me psyched up about, okay, I'm gonna give this a shot and try to get into the All-Star game, because we had been talking on a past show. I wasn't into it like I used to be, and I started watching it last night. Still couldn't get into it. How about you, Dave?
Same thing with me. Something I used to kind of carve my week around, and we'd get together and make bets on the game and stuff like that. I was just a passing interest last night. I had the game on, but I had the sound down, and I was doing stuff around the house, and then, you know, then I went on the internet and I saw some posts from some friends. Kind of had the same feeling. They were just talking about, they've been baseball fans their whole life, and like, what's wrong? I mean, how come I'm not into it? And I've been thinking about that. Obviously, one thing is the star power. I think they're going to have to fix something. I mean, I don't know how many people were supposed to be there that weren't. Like, it was over 20 stars, you know, bailed out and stuff. And, you know, Derek Jeter, you've just mentioned him for physical and physical and mental exhaustion or something. I mean, come on, you know. And I just think they got to put a little more oomph into it, make it a more meaningful game. And then if you're going to not have all the right stars play, how can you play for the home field advantage? You know, it doesn't.
Oh, that's the part really that to me is kind of a joke. But when you look at it, like I tweeted during the introductions, that the introductions would have been quicker if they had just named all major league players who weren't named to the All-Star game. There was, you know, 84 guys or something. It's going on and on and on. And half the guys like, who? What's he doing there? Why do they think that they have to get everybody into the game then, too? It used to be better when they'd play. The bigger stars would play most of the game, and you'd sub some of the weaker positions. And I don't know. It's just not that exciting.
I saw the Batista thing that, you know, when he tried to score, and you know, of course, I thought about, you know, Fosse and Rose and stuff, and Batista made such a weak slide. And it's just,
yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously, all these guys have huge contracts and big agents, and people are telling them what to do, and you know, never used to be like that, but. I don't know if Seelig's going to have to step in and make it more mandatory for these guys to show up or what, but there's just nothing there, nothing interesting about it.
I heard Steve Stone made a comment that if a guy decides he's not going to come and he's not seriously injured, then they should just have it that, okay, that's fine, but you'll never be invited to another All-Star game. And maybe some of the guys wouldn't care, but they have to do something about it. One good thing from last night's game, I was talking to Dave Cook from Hoosier Bat yesterday on the telephone, HoosierBat.com. They're the main sponsor of this show, and which we appreciate greatly. But Dave was, I asked him any big name all-stars use Hoosier bats, and he was like, oh yeah, Prince Fielder uses it and loves it. So I was like, oh, well, I hope he has a good game then. And sure enough, boom, he hits the home run. So that was good. And another note actually about Hoosier bat, the Frank Thomas statue is going to be unveiled outside the cell. Dave thought it was on August 4th, and Frank Thomas will be holding a Hoosier bat in that statue. Isn't that neat? I think that's neat. I've had those bats in my hand before, the Hoosier bats. They are just beautiful bats.
How would you fix the All-Star game?
I think I would cut down the rosters. There's too many guys on it, and I would have, okay, with the fan voting, I would say that's fine. Have the fans vote, but not necessarily for the, they don't have to start the guys that they vote in. I'd let the managers pick the starting guys. Maybe the one guy from each league that has the most overall votes has to start. Everybody else, let the managers pick the starters. Nobody gets guaranteed they're going to get into the game. And, you know, just try to get more play from the big stars and not so much, you know, well, if this poor guy had to travel from New York to Arizona, we're going to try to get him his face in the game. I also would not have one player from each team guaranteed on the roster. That's a dumb rule. But what about you? You have any? What do you think of those ideas?
As a Cubs fan, although like I told you, I didn't pay much attention to the game. I don't even know how Castro did, but I do get a charge out of seeing a Cub in there. But do you think it goes beyond that? In that there's just a lack of star power in today's game. Again, when I was a kid, I mean, you want to see a Willie Mays or a Hank Aaron or something. There's nobody like that, even in an All-Star game right now, right? I can't think of anybody.
You know, some of the big stars have had injuries or aren't having that big of years. I mean, Pujols is a big star. Joe Mauer's a big star. And they weren't even invited to it. And then Jeter, you know, Jeter did have a leg problem leading up. And you could see even, I was watching that, I had the game on Saturday when he got his 3,000th hit. I had that game on here. You could see he's still kind of hobbled from that. A-Rod is undergoing surgery. So, I mean, there are guys that are some of the big stars. It just was
I remember the All-Star games when I was a kid. I mean, even Willie Mays would be on his last legs and he'd come and do a man, you know, just a pinch hit or something. Jeter could have done something like that. Just you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Of the guys, I mean, literally a lot of the years, Mays or Aaron or those guys would play all nine innings.
Yeah, right.
And it was better.
It was just a
better game.
Nature of the game, right.
Yeah, so I really think those are some of the changes that they need to make. You know, the guys are making so much money and agents are involved and the unions and all that. So, you know, who knows what's been negotiated that they even can or can't do.
Well, it's going down the road of the Pro Bowl, you know. I mean, that's where it's heading, you know. If they play in the middle of the year, you know. But
yeah, the Pro Bowl is, football is really, that's a hard sport to have an All-Star game, because you can't hit in an All-Star game. If you started killing guys in the All-Star game, I mean, nobody would show up. So yeah. Now I think our guy Phil Rogers is in from Arizona. Phil, you there?
Technology just kicks me in the rear every day. How are you guys doing?
All right. Good. So you were at the All-Star game.
Yes, sir.
Now, was it, what was it like when you were there? We've been talking about it some. We both, Dave and I, just to give you a little, like you had talked me into being excited about the All-Star game, so I tried to watch it, but I thought it was just as dull as could be, and Dave agreed with me, and we were talking about some ways we thought the game could be improved, but with you being there, what did you think of it being there?
Well, I mean, it was a good baseball game, but it was, you know, that National League pitching just came in and was overpowering guys. And, you know, I think it was, not necessarily unlike a lot of the postseason games last year where you saw, you know, pitching really dominate, and, you know, perhaps with the stakes not being the way they were in the, say, in the World Series when the Giants pitching dominated, it didn't translate that way. But I thought it was a good baseball game. The atmosphere was good. They do a lot of things at Chase Field in Arizona that's a little bit AA-like, but most of that's the in-between inning stuff that wouldn't have gotten on the telecast. And I thought they did a good job, and I thought it was a good game. But you know, there were no terrifically memorable plays. I mean, you know, the catch Jose Bautista made in the first inning was the best play of the game.
Yeah, that was a great catch.
Yeah, you know, but I thought it was just, you know, I think batter. If you look at Paul Konerko's two at bats, I mean, you saw how guys were focused and concentrating the same way they do in a regular season game. But that National League pitching is just really, really good. And I think it, the pitchers kept it from being, you know, more of an entertaining game.
Some of the top pitchers from the American League weren't able to pitch because they were pitching Sunday or hurt. So that did hurt the American League some too. But it does seem overall like the National League is catching up quite a bit to the American League. A couple years ago, it seemed like the American League just overall was deeper and better, but I think some of the new young guys coming in at the National League have really evened things out quite a bit. But one of the things Dave and I were talking about, the stars need to play more innings, I think, in an all-star game, and they have to cut the rosters down. I mean, if they're really going to have a really good game, as far as I'm concerned, this isn't Little League. Everybody doesn't have to get in. Don't tell people, well, if you're going to come, you know, we're going to try to get you in. No, we're going to try to win the game.
Well, you saw last night the National League use those Phillies pitchers a couple innings each. Halliday went two, and Cliff Lee was going to go two before he got rat-a-tatted around that one inning. And I don't know that that's really a valid criticism either. You know,
about pitchers so much as the players, the guys out on the field. We, like Dave and I were saying, it, you know, guys like Willie Mays and Aaron and those guys used to play a lot of times the whole nine innings in an all-star game, and it was just better that way.
Well, you know, I spent some time earlier this year talking to Minnie Minoso, and he said he was always the number two left fielder behind Ted Williams. Your point's probably right that, I mean, guys would play more, but I think who in that game did you really want to see that much more? I think we're in an era where baseball doesn't have enough stars. I think that's the problem. You know, it was stupid. It was incredibly stupid that Albert Pujols wasn't a National League All-Star the way
we were talking about that.
Yeah, the way his recovery broke. That was really stupid. You know, I Prince Fielder's fun to watch. It would have been nice to see him in there, but he's replaced by last year's NL MVP and Joey Votto. So, yeah, I don't know that I'm going to complain about that. And
did you know that Prince Fielder uses Hoosier bats, Phil?
I did not know that, but you know, I'm not surprised at all. I mean,
yes,
I agree. I mean, that's what I was saying. I just don't think there's, you know. So we were talking about how I was talking to some friends last night through the web and stuff. People were saying, I'm a baseball fan my whole life, and I'm not interested in this game, and what's wrong? And I thought about it. I think that is. I think there's no star that's going to gravitate you to the game right now to make you want to watch that on television. You know?
Yeah, and I think, Dave, don't you think part of that is the sterile atmosphere we're kind of in where guys – if a guy steps out of his shell and is unusual, he gets hit over the head for being unusual and different. And I think everybody, there's a political correctness that I think is choking off some of the star power. You know, Heath Bell, when he ran in from the outfield and then slid in front of a mound, incredibly stupid. I mean, he could have broken his leg and been done. But, you know, at least you had a guy that was willing to, you know, to let his personality go. And, you know, there are some guys like that. Certainly Brian Wilson is like that. It, you know, it comes off as a little contrived sometimes. But, you know, I think it's the political correctness that's, you know, again, not a baseball problem, a society problem that I think everybody's trying to be a round peg fitting a round hole.
Yeah.
Well, part of it too, I mean, really, when you look at maybe three of the most popular or most fun to watch stars in baseball are Pujols, Jeter, and Mauer, and none of them were there. I mean, if you had an all-star game in 1962 and it didn't have Mantle, Mays, and Aaron, you know, it wouldn't be as good. So I think that's also part of it, that this particular year was a weird year for the big stars.
Well, I think you're, you know, definitely right on Mauer, but it's not like he's ever a guy that I think people are that jazzed up to see. I think he's, you know, unless
you're a twin. I like to watch him. I love to watch Mauer hit and, you know, and he's a catcher, so I don't know. He's like this generation's Johnny Bench to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great player. I don't know how, entertaining he is. Certainly, you would have rather seen him than Alex Avila, who, you know, that was one thing about the game was give the National League credit for coming out and being ultra aggressive. I mean, I think, you know, Bruce Bochy wasn't afraid to embarrass guys in the All-Star game and you know, the National League. Starlin Castro, how many times he ever stole second and third in the same, sequence? You know, I thought the National League really stepped on the pedal when they had a chance and Alex Avila actually, has one of the highest ratios for throwing out guys. You know, Matt Wieters, the second catcher, has the best ratio. So,
you know, we're talking about unconventional thinking now. They would never do this, but what about changing the rules a little bit for the All-Star game? Like, I look into it if, like, say they were, like, 3-2 counts or, you know, they use wacky, go back to Charlie Finley, wacky balls, or just experiment a little bit. I know baseball is a game of tradition.
Here's a big rule change that I think the All-Star game needs to do and which would allow them to cut down the rosters. You would be able to put guys back into the game. I mean, let's say somebody gets hurt or your roster starts getting down, whatever. Well, put a guy who was pulled out, put him back into the game. Why not?
They have a rule now where both sides designate one guy to re-enter. I mean, you know, the rules are designed to give them, and the size of the roster, they're designed to give them a 16-inning game. You guys remember that game at Yankee Stadium? Where they basically almost ran out of pitchers. That's the one that got the rosters expanded again up to this current level. And, you know, I think the Sunday, they are going to reexamine the rule about, if you pitch on a Sunday, you can't be on the active roster for the game. You know, it had gotten to the point where teams didn't want their pitchers who had pitched on Sunday to pitch in the All-Star game, but they would still be in uniform on the bench. And as a fan, you could think, well, maybe this is the inning that Justin Verlander gets in the game, even though at the end of the night, Justin Verlander's not getting in the game. You know, I do think that has hurt it a little bit when you take all those American League pitchers that were ineligible. Sabathia, you know, Verlander, the Cy Young winner, Felix Hernandez. You know, I'd lost a lot. You know, when we talk about the star power, this is an era of pitching being the stars, and they, you know, erased a lot of that right from the start. So, you know, I think that's, you know, whatever they do, there's downsides to everything. But let's wait and see what the ratings are.
I bet it'll be the all-time low ratings. I really do.
Well, you could be right, and, you know, if so, I'm gonna just look and say, you know, no stars. You know, Major League Baseball needs to find a way to develop stars. But, you know, I know, talking to Bud Selig yesterday, you know, across the board, you know, they're not really concerned about the cities where they have the attendance drops. There are enough other cities where they have the attendance up. Their revenue is at an all-time high. That's until their revenue takes a hit, they're never going to get worried about any of this stuff. And, you know, I think the things they've done the last couple of years, the website, MLB.com, makes them a lot of money, and the MLB Network has made them a lot of money, and, you know, maybe that sort of artificially makes them think things are better than they are, but, you know, they definitely are not looking right now like there's any reason to change anything.
Well, it's time for a short break. Well, when we come back, I had spoken with actually 8 different, most of the top sports collectibles auction houses in the country about the value of the Derek Jeter 3,000th hit home run ball. If it had gone into the auction place, what it might have gone for. And I got some interesting comments from these guys. So hang in there, folks. When we come back, we'll go over that and we'll talk a little bit about what maybe we would have done if we had gotten the ball, and Bucks in the Belfry, Hoaxster Chicago, a lot to come, so hang in there, folks.
The solid sound of wood hitting a leather ball. That's the way baseball started, and that's how Hoosier Bat Company believes the game should be played. They've been providing bats to minor and major leaguers for 20 years. They offer ash bats, birch bats, and their patented Wood Force 2000, a bat with hickory in the sweet spot for great hits. View their products online at HoosierBat.com and see why players at every level have come to appreciate their quality and customer service. You can also visit them at 4511 Evans Avenue in Valparaiso, Indiana, or call 1-800-228-3787.
Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream is the place for great pizza and more. They use only the finest ingredients. That's why Rosati's mouth-watering menu can't be beat. Rosati's delivers for lunch daily. In Naperville, call 630-305-3500. In Carroll Stream, 630-653-9009. That's Rosati's of Naperville and Carroll Stream.
You found the best place for quality internet talk. You're on TalkZone.com. Internet Talk Radio.
It's time for this week's edition of Bucks in the Belfry, and there were a lot of Bucks talk being tossed around this week. I talked to 8 of the leading auction houses for sports collectibles in the country about, in case you didn't know it, on Saturday, Derek Jeter had a 5-for-5 game, and his second hit in that game was his 3,000th hit of his career, and it was also a home run. So this ball was caught by a fan who decided to give it back to the Yankees. The Yankees actually gave him some gifts as for returning it, and it turns out there's a very good chance he's going to have to, a pretty stiff tax bill he's going to have to pay, you know, which basically from being a nice guy, I would imagine he'll have to sell some of the, he got 4 Champions Suite tickets for the remaining home games and any postseason games, along with 3 bats, 3 balls, and 2 jerseys all signed by Jeters. It sounds like the estimated value of the stuff that he got from the Yankees was somewhere in the $50,000 to $75,000 range, and which means he's going to have to pay a tax bill probably of at least $14,000. So that this is a young guy who already owes $100,000 on his student loan bills. So this, it may not have been the wisest idea. It comes off like a really good guy to return it. He wanted Jeter to have the ball. But so anyway, I talked to some of the auction houses about what they thought that ball would have gone for in one of their auctions. And starting from low to high, Tom DiAlonzo from Robert Edward Auctions thought easily over $100,000. You'll never know for sure on an auction like that, but they didn't see I would go for less than that. Mike Hefner at Leland's.com said $100,000 or more. It might never be worth more than right now is what he thought, that, you know, with all the publicity about it. David Kohler, president of SCP Auctions, thought $100,000 to $150,000. Ray Schulte of SchulteSports.com. These are also the guys who actually do the publicity for the National Sports Collectors Convention, but they do auctions. He figured about $225,000. Doug Allen from Legendary Auctions figured about $250,000. Let's see here. Who am I missing? J.P. Cohen from Memory Lane said if it sold right away, probably $200,000 to $300,000. Once again, he thought it would be worth more right away than if you had waited a couple years on it. And Chris Ivey, director of vintage sports memorabilia for Heritage Auctions, put the value of the ball at $250,000 on the low end, without saying how high it could go from there, but definitely comfortable that it would hit at least $250,000. Then we went to the final word. I'll read this email back from David Hunt, president of Hunt Auctions. He says, Tom, I would value the Jeter ball between $250,000 and $500,000. The fact that it ended up being a home run is what makes it very unique, and that most 3,000 hit balls obviously would be in the field of play and thus return to the player. So the amount that would ever be sold is minimal. Since the guy has decided to get the ball back to Jeter, it's moot, and I have the highest respect for the decision that he made. As a true baseball fan, rather than the vast majority of people who would have sold the ball without contacting Jeter to try to make it work first. So, I don't know, let's say one of you guys was out in left field and caught that ball. What would you have done with it?
Well, let me ask you this, Tom. What do you think this kid would have done if he had two kids going to college? You know, I can tell you what I would have done. You know, I might not, as a baseball writer for the Chicago Tribune, I might not want to have my name involved in it. I might want to have had a friend like Tom Morgan to take the ball and auction it. But, I can't imagine there are very many people that wouldn't look to get the cash value out of it.
How about you, Dave?
Depends on the player, if I like the player or not. You know, Jeter, I might have given it back. I don't know. Jeter's a good guy, and at my age, I don't need another baseball around here. I've got a lot of souvenir baseballs and stuff. But
$200,000 or $300,000 though, Dave. Don't you think you could have used that right now?
Yeah, I sure could.
That's the thing, you know. It's kind of the way with taxes and the way the world's set up. He's not playing for free. He's making like $20 million a year. You know, you could go to Jeter and say, you know, I'll offer this. And of course, I don't know what this guy knew about what this ball might have been worth. But, I mean, to me, what I would have done, I would have offered it to Jeter, but he would have had to have bought it. I'm going to say, look, I'm not going to lose money on this deal. If you get first shot, I'll give you a better deal than I think it would go for in an auction. But if you don't want to do that, then I'll auction it. So I would have given them the choice as far as that goes. But a kid who's got $100,000 in student loans and now he might get a $15,000 or $20,000 tax bill on top of it, you know, that just doesn't seem right. I hope Jeter gives him a good tip, like $50,000 good, something like that. Don't you think? I don't know. I just think the way the world is set up, where it's so money based and everything gets taxed, you're almost forced to sell the ball.
Tom, his father was with him at the game, was sitting right beside him when he got the ball. And so I don't think this would have just been his decision. I think it was also his dad's. And that to me makes it more inexplicable, unless, you know, it's a family that's financially comfortable, which goes off of the student loan thing.
Yeah, I don't think they're well-to-do at all.
Well,
they're well-to-do to get in a Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, I guess you have to be, right, for that team, game. Those tickets couldn't have been cheap.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I don't know, maybe this guy will get some big job. To me, the Yankees should have offered him a job. You know, I said on Twitter, George Costanza's old job would have been perfect for him.
Hey, Tom, but you assume the Yankees like Jeter. Where were the Steinbrenners for the 3,000th hit day? There wasn't a Steinbrenner in the building, apparently. And
yeah, you're right. I didn't think about that, but you're right about that.
There's a gap between the organization and Jeter that was never there before these contract talks last winter. And, you know, I think that might have also played somewhat into Jeter's decision not to go to the All-Star game. I think there's a just sort of a crummy backdrop to all of this. And, you know, if things were the way they were 2 or 3 years ago, maybe some things might have played out differently. But, you know, I know around the Yankee circles, the Steinbrenners are taking some heat for not really being there and showing the respect to the captain.
Yeah, I had the game on here at T-Crown, and I actually watched his whole entire first two at-bats. They were just classic Jeter at-bats where he's working the count, fouling balls off, and when he hit I could almost sense a home run coming on that second at-bat. It was weird, but it was like, oh, there it is. I could feel it coming. But, yeah, there wasn't anything – I didn't think of that, you know, because there was so much. They had the guy interviewed later during the game that got the ball. But you're right. There were no congratulations from – they weren't even around. That is weird. I hadn't thought of that. Boy, you should be a baseball writer, Phil.
I'm thinking about it. Hey, speaking of baseball writers, the best baseball story – that I read this week was written by Dave Hoekstra, Lake County Fielder reporter. What a mess that must have been, huh?
You know how much I love minor league ball, and actually, I don't know where you started in the story. It all started last Wednesday, right after our show. You know, to be honest, I had a furlough day, okay? Last Wednesday was a furlough day, so I thought, well, I'll do something for the sports department on my own time. So I was curious about that Lake County road trip they took. You know, you guys know about that. They did they're in this new league, the North American Baseball League, because all the independent leagues kind of split up, and so this new league started, and they've got teams in Maui, and Lake County's in a division with Maui and Edmonton and Yuma, Arizona. So you have this really weird travel scheme where they do these like 30-game road trips and stuff, and with this new stadium they were building in Zion, it's not quite done yet. This is the Fielders, the team that, although he's pulling back now a little bit, suppose they were trying to get comments from him, Kevin Costner's involved with. Their stadium was still being built, so Lake County had to start the season on the road. So their home opener was July 3rd. So I was curious about, you know, what their road trip was like. And it was just a total cast of characters when we got out there last Wednesday. Their Lake County's manager was Tim Johnson, the former Blue Jay manager, you know, who got bounced for fabricating the stories about Vietnam. And then it turns out his hitting coach was former Cub Pete LeCocq. And there was just all kinds of characters. It turned out, I didn't know this, Yuma's player manager was Jose Canseco. Yuma's center fielder was Joey Gathright. It was crazy. So, you know, we did the story, and it ran in Sunday's paper. And then I guess over the weekend, Saturday, the bottom line is these guys, like any good road trip, I was telling Jimmy Buffett this yesterday, any good road trip, these guys came back broke. The team pretty much came back with no money. And they couldn't play, you know, they couldn't pay the coaches, couldn't pay the players. So Saturday's game, Johnson resigned before the game. Now they're saying he resigned during the game. But anyway, Tim Johnson resigned. So then Pete LeCocq takes over, and Pete LeCocq puts out a lineup of all non-pitchers, you know, and Jose Canseco does the same thing. Jose Canseco names himself starting pitcher. He pitches 6 innings. LeCocq resigns after the game. It was just total chaos. And then I'm writing the story on Monday because we did a follow-up. And about 5 o'clock, since they had this little revolt, the team released, like, 14 players and traded 9 players. And so they're basically, as of yesterday, starting from scratch with a new manager and a whole new team. And that's
so if you
can complete stadium.
So if you can play ball, if you're a good player, you don't have a job, get out to Gurney Mills and find those Lake County Fielders because they're looking.
How would you like to be traded to the Lake County Fielders when you've heard that they aren't paying their guys? You'd be like, oh, boy.
It's really one of the more, one of the most bizarre minor league baseball stories in recent times. Stuff crazy.
I don't get the whole independent league anyway. I mean, so these guys aren't growing guys for any teams or anything. This is just guys who were good or think they're good and just want to keep playing, and it's no connection to any major league or minor league, right?
Right. No affiliation. You know, it goes, the heritage goes all the way back to, I think the independent league first went, Phil, correct me if I'm wrong, but the first one on the radar was the St. Paul Saints. I mean, Daryl Strawberry, all these guys who maybe were banned from baseball. And then guys who are some of those younger players who, like, sat out contracts and stuff, they've gone to the independent leagues and stuff.
I think it speaks to the fact that there's more demand to watch baseball than there is organized baseball. And, you know, in our past, a lot of communities had town teams of guys that played there, and it was a fairly high level of ball. And then if you're in your town, you could go watch the team. Independent baseball has kind of replaced that old concept. And Dave, one thing I saw in your second story, I think, was that the Lake County Fielders, now I don't know, it could have just been six or seven games, but they were averaging 2,500 people. So people were going out to see him. I mean, not in big numbers, but, you know, that's why, you know, a community like Schaumburg, you know, I mean, in the Chicago area, there's all those really nice parks. Lockport has the really nice park, or Joliet, I guess it is, has a really nice park down there. Schaumburg.
I encourage people to go to Gary. Gary is just a really nice vista for a Midwest minor league or independent league baseball experience. You know, it's in downtown Gary. You get in and out. I mean, it's safe. You can sit there and you see the smokestacks and the highways and the trains. It's really kind of a gritty a look at the landscape. It's a fun place to watch a game. It's a nice stadium. The owner of the Lake County team, the same guy who was at Schaumburg, and Schaumburg had a lot of financial issues, and that stadium's padlocked this year. And I'm not doing a Schaumburg story, but I've heard the people in Schaumburg are really upset that they've lost that team. That's a really nice stadium. I mean, they're empty. I think some league is going to try to move in there next year and stuff. But Lake County's got a long way to go. But they do. The game I went to was a day game, and they had a kids' day, so all these church groups and school groups. So it was a lot of kids there. But the stadium, they do need a lot of work. No canopy, no shelter from the sun. It was a hot, sunny day last Wednesday. I'm sitting in these seats. I just sat in the stands, and I was down the third baseline. These seats, like, really faded and blue and kind of funky. And when I was doing my first story, where did these seats come? I called, trying to find out where these seats came from. And they were rescued from the an old Masters golf tournament arena and stuff. So they're importing stuff in. It's all kind of, you know, haphazard and stuff. But
how much are tickets?
That's a good question. I think like $6 to $10. It's pretty cheap. Independent ball is pretty cheap, you know. So,
you know, you do find a lot of guys every year that get signed by big league organizations off the independent leagues. You know, it's sort of where you go when you don't have a job, but you know, you can really sort of get your career turned around there and. You know, there are a lot of guys in the big leagues that have spent some time in independent ball.
Who are some of those? There's a couple young guys who, like, sat. I can't think of their names right. Who sat out, you know, they had contracts, gravel.
The Royals pitcher, Luke Hoshaver's a guy. J.D. Drew did that, I believe.
J.D. Drew, right. Yeah, he played with the Baseball Saints, right.
You know, Scott Boras will use the independent leagues as leverage in a contract negotiation. Well, you know, okay, my guy can't go back to Florida State, but he'll go play, you know, independent ball and then go into the draft. And, there have been quite a few cases like that in the draft in recent years.
You know what Pete Lacock told me? This is off the grid a little bit, but the very last pitch that Bob Gibson threw, Pete Lacock hit a grand slam off him. And he said it was a Bob Gibson day in St. Louis and stuff, and it's a good story. I'm an old Pete Lacock fan. And by the way, I asked how Pete Lacock's father was doing. Still doing fine. Peter Marshall from Hollywood Squares. He said he's still singing like on cruise ship stuff. So he was very proud that I would ask about Peter Marshall.
Jack Percani told me that he caught a pop-up, that which was Carl Yastrzemski's last at-bat in the major leagues. He popped out to Jack Percani.
Wow.
Just as a sidebar.
Nolan Ryan's career ended the same way as Bob Gibson. I forget the hitter, but it was essentially Nolan Ryan day, and you know, it was going to be, there was a lot of attention on Ryan, and he had nothing left, pitched bad, and it was taken out of the game after a home run by a very anonymous guy whose name escapes me.
My son got a foul ball in the game, Nolan Ryan's last game at White Sox Park. My son was sick, and we still went to the game. The doctor said, oh, yeah, he'll be fine. He won't be real energetic. And I'll never forget this. He was probably 7 or 8 years old, and he's holding a thing of cotton candy. He looked kind of wiped out. Ball, Palmeiro actually hit the foul off of Jack McDowell. But the ball, you know, all these people jumping up, and it bounces a couple times and rolls right under my son's seat. He just kind of picks, reaches down and picks it up. You know, the easiest pickup you ever could have made. So we got a couple more items from Bucks in the Belfry before we go to the break. On the tcrowntom.com website, there's links to some of my eBay items. I have an interesting one-of-one cut signature autograph of Louis B. Mayer. He's the old one of the big guys in MGM, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. He died in 1957, real power broker in the movie industry, especially in the 30s and 40s. That's a one-of-one cut signature. Then I have a Gordon Beckham autograph, a graded gem mint, a rookie year autograph card. I wish Gordon Beckham could do something to just shorten up his swing. He's got like a hitch in his swing, and he has so much potential to be a good all fields hitter, but right now up to this point, all he's been is basically a good field, no-hit guy. Have you watched him much, Phil?
Yeah, I have, and a little disappointing to me, you know, based on his development. I thought he was going to be a real run-producing type guy for a small guy, you know, and maybe a guy that could have Jeff Kent-like, you know, numbers at second base. But, I mean, that's a high expectation. Hey, two quick things. The guy off Nolan Ryan that hit his last at bat was Dan Howitt, an old first baseman.
Wow.
Was a grand slam. Nolan's last game, he got nobody out and gave up this Dan Howitt grand slam, and then he was hooked. So that was his Pete LeCocq moment. And Gordon Beckham came up last night, Tom, and this might make you a little bit sick. I don't know. In watching the All-Star game, Adrian Gonzalez's homer, going back to before the Konerko Dunn moves last winter, the White Sox were pretty seriously talking to the Padres about Adrian Gonzalez, and the Gordon Beckham was the big guy in the trade. And I remember after it became public that those discussions had started, big uproar. Should they trade Gordon Beckham? You know, should they put Gordon Beckham in the Adrian Gonzalez trade? What do you think about that one?
Yeah, you know what? I don't think people, because he was playing for San Diego, I think a lot of people just didn't realize what a great player Adrian Gonzalez is.
I was going to say, the other thing you don't know for sure was whether you could have signed him long term, which the Red Sox took care of doing. And,
yeah,
you know, if you were renting him for 1 year, which you had to be worried that might be the possibility, would that be that good? But, you know, I think people really knew about him. And, you know, the fact that he was able to put up numbers in San Diego, although he's had an interesting career. He's the first overall pick in the country. And the Padres, where it clicked, were the third team he was with. The Marlins drafted him, and the Texas Rangers traded him. Horrible trade to get a Japanese reliever. They traded him and the Chris Young, the tall left-hander. You know, just a dreadful trade. So
started at King County, Gonzalez.
Yeah, he was a Cougar.
He's actually in my book. He was a great, you know, we had him as one of the alumni in my book. He's just a great guy. Just, well, I'm sure you've talked to him, Phil. He's just real clubhouse leader, just a real good guy.
And Dave, what is the name of that book and where can it be found?
Those are two good questions. Cougar Snappers and Loons, do you still have some copies?
Yes, I have signed copies by the author, Dave Hoekstra.
That's thanks for
sale at T-Crown.
And I think also at my publisher, campmisspress.com, or you can call me. I've got them in the trunk of my car. You know, it's our Jones.
Dave will drive to your house and sign it and drop it off if you buy one from
him. That's right. I like that grassroots marketing, right?
Yeah. Well, I guess we better take a short break. I wanted to talk about one more item about... I have a Curtis Granderson patch, and I wanted to talk about Phil's MVP picks. But we have to get to a short break. We'll come back with Hoekstra Chicago, and if we have time at the end, we'll talk about Granderson. So hang in there, everybody. We'll be right back.
The solid sound of wood hitting a leather ball. That's the way baseball started, and that's how Hoosier Bat Company believes the game should be played. They've been providing bats to minor and major leaguers for 20 years. They offer ash bats, birch bats, and their patented Wood Force 2000, a bat with hickory in the sweet spot for great hits. View their products online at HoosierBat.com and see why players at every level have come to appreciate their quality and customer service. You can also visit them at 4511 Evans Avenue in Valparaiso, Indiana, or call 1-800-228-3787. Southside Cards and Collectibles is your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. No matter what your hobby, baseball, football, basketball, hockey, NASCAR, gaming, or more, Southside Cards carries all the new packs and boxes from Upper Deck, Topps, Panini, and Press Pass. You'll also find memorabilia and supplies. Come in today and see for yourself. Southside Cards is open every day but Monday. They're located at 11325 West 143rd Street, Orland Park, Illinois. Call 708-873-5088 or visit them online at southsidecards.com. Southside Cards and Collectibles, your one-stop shop for premier cards and collectibles. Call 708-873-5088 or online at southsidecards.com.
A tool for people to connect with the universe and begin to understand it.
TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio.
Another edition of Hoekstra Chicago. Take it away, Dave.
Well, I'll make it quick. I know we're busy today, but this weekend is the hipster music festival of the year. This is like the real cutting edge thing, more so than Lollapalooza. It's the Pitchfork Music Festival, and it's Friday through Sunday. And I like the location, although I've never been to the festival. Pitchfork is like a website and for like alternative and independent music, and they sponsor this thing for a few years, and it's at Union Park, which is that nice little park just west or just east of the United Center, 1501 West Randolph. So they've got like 40 different artists playing over 3 days. I believe a single day ticket is like $45. A couple of quick picks. A woman I've written about who I really love and adore, she's playing there 7:20 on Friday night. That's Nico Case. Actually came through Chicago out of Seattle. She did a residency at the Hideout. Kind of started as a country singer. Now she's like in a, alt rock and stuff. Just a really, really sterling vocals. Really pure, really powerful. Now if I was in town, I'm going to be out of town. Here's somebody I picked for Saturday night. A woman named Zola Jesus. She's playing on the blues stage at 7:40. I'll just read you their little synopsis of her. This is off the Pitchfork website. She blends haunting vocals and witchy vibes to create a goth sound and evoke a psychedelic, mad, Maxian creep. So I'll see you there, Tom, for that.
Hey, Dave, if you didn't want festival tickets, if you just wanted to go to one night, can you buy a ticket for a night, or you got to get in?
Of course, I think they have 3 day tickets. They're sold out, but you can buy single night tickets. And at first night, I think I did go to the Dave Matthews stuff last weekend, and the Friday night was the slowest and the easiest to get around, and I think the same is true for this. I think the Friday night is Friday night strong bookings, and I think that'll be the easiest one to get into. But it's a nice venue for a festival.
What did you think of the South Chicago location for the caravan?
I kind of liked it. You know, I was talking to a lot of people, and for the first time out, like Lollapalooza, it took Lollapalooza 3 or 4 years to get their feet off the ground. For the first run, I think it was okay. There were transportation troubles, I guess, on the way out. You know, some of these shuttles were slow. I was in and out just because I was on deadline. I went down there like at 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon, like rush hour traffic. It didn't take, you know, I live out on the west side of Chicago. It took me about 45 minutes to get there. There was no problem getting down there. I think it's good for the neighborhood. I think the site has a lot of potential. One problem, they call it Lakeside, and they had 3 different stages, and there was no view of the lake. They kind of fenced off the lake. I was talking to some of the developers. I think they were just worried about security, like kids running into the lake and drowning and stuff. But somehow they've got to. I talked to some fans who came in from the Northwest, and they talked. I've never been to this venue, but they talked about the Gorge in Washington and how it has a beautiful view of the Columbia River, and how they thought the same thing would be happening with Lake Michigan. So I think maybe down the road, there's certainly going to be more shows there. I think down the road, they should incorporate the lake more. But, you know, people talked about it being dusty and the rocks. I mean, well, it was a U.S. Steel thing, and a lot of those Dave Matthews fans camp. So, I mean, they should be used to that. But I think it worked. I liked it.
Dave, what do they call the venue, that site?
They call it Lakeside.
Lakeside, okay, cool.
Lakeside for now, yeah. And I guarantee you they'll do something else there next year. You know,
is Lollapalooza the early August this year, Dave?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure my niece is playing there this year, actually.
Who's that?
Her name's Greta Morgan.
Oh yeah, you told me about her. Yeah.
And yeah, she's
what's
a really
the band?
Good. Well, she's like she used to be part of a band, and now she has a band, but I think she just it's just like Greta Morgan.
I think I saw her band something Ghost something.
You know what? I'll get the details on it and bring it up next week.
I saw a band advertised, and I thought, you know, I think a friend of a friend knows somebody that's in that band. I think that was hers.
Yeah, she's really a great talent, actually.
She doesn't have witchy vibes like the Soul of Jesus, does she?
No. She's more like one of her songs would play. I think one of her songs actually was on not – a show that's like a Grey's Anatomy type show, you know what I mean? Where it's hard to explain. it's hard to explain, but she's very good, very talented, Greta Morgan. So you have to keep an eye out for some of the things she's up to. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk about real quick from Phil, you did your halfway mark MVPs for the major leagues. And I think, didn't you have Prince Fielder and Curtis Granderson were your picks?
They were. And, you know, I got to admit, I have a man crush on Granderson. So
you do. You do. I know you do. And I like Granderson, too, but not enough to have him MVP. I like him a lot. I was hoping the White Sox were going to be able to actually get him. I think we had talked about that. But I think with the years that Adrian Gonzalez and even Bautista and even Pauly are having, I don't think you could put Granderson MVP, but he's having a great year.
Yeah. Since the All-Star break last year, the guy has 42 home runs.
Yeah.
As a center fielder, you know, with speed at Yankee, you know, for the Yankees, I don't think you can overstate the ball player he's become. He made a mechanical adjustment in his swing, and talking to coaches, guys around the game, right now, there's not a pitch he can't crush. You know, best pitchers in baseball.
The White Sox need a mechanic to straighten out those swings of Alex Rios and Adam Dunn. It's like, what? Why don't these guys try something different?
Hey, I've got some news for you on that front. Adam Dunn, his career, you know, the worst 2 months of his career, historically.
September and August.
Exactly. Bing, bing, bing. And both he and Rios are guys that career-wise have been better in the first half than the second. So there's not even anything historically you can point to say they'll be okay.
You could not do worse. you couldn't do worse. I mean, he's hitting 160. How you can't do worse and still get at bats. It's kind of amazing he still gets at bats. Kenny Williams has to make a deal to clear a spot for Vicieto to be playing on this team very quickly.
Here's what it appears to me that he's maneuvering toward is a Carlos Quinton trade to clear that spot, and then an Edwin Jackson trade to bring back some pitching again, some young pitching. Whether he can pull that off or not, I don't know, but there seem to be two or three teams interested in Quinton, the Braves being one of them, the Phillies, possibly the Angels.
I was talking about that even in spring training, that Quinton would be the most likely White Sox to be traded because, number one, he's one of the few guys that there'd be a big demand for, and number two, Vicieto's really the same type of guy. And if you remember, in spring training before Vicieto got hurt, I mean, he was their best hitter. I don't think there's any doubt he's ready to play every day in the major leagues.
You know, I don't know how good he is in the outfield, but Carlos Quinton is a bottom half outfielder in right field. I mean, so
their entire outfield defense is below average major league defense.
Yeah, and that was one thing I was going to point out from the All-Star game last night. You know, the outfield defense, Hunter Pence's throw to home plate, you know, bing, and, you know, that Bautista catch was great. Really, you know, that is definitely a place the White Sox could improve. And Alex Rios might be, he's becoming as big of a issue almost as Dunn. I mean, he is so up and down, and the White Sox are locked into his contract, I think, through 2013, maybe with an option for 14. And, you know, the thing with Quinton, if they keep him next year, he's going to be a 10 million plus a year guy. So, you know, he's to the point that you have to decide, do you want to make him a fixture because you're going to have to pay him, or do you want to get some value? And I think with Vicieto there, I think they're clearly leaning toward the value.
I call Alex Rios's play as a slump shouldered type of play. It's almost like he's like, well, I'm not doing well, and he's hanging his head. He had two balls hit the center field that were home runs that any halfway decent high school outfielder could have gone to the fence, jumped, and caught. And he ran into the wall both times. It's like, come on. You know, don't take your bad hitting out to the field with you. He's been terrible in center field, almost as bad as he is at the plate. And he should be at least an average to above average center fielder.
Yeah, there's your guy, Ken Williams, again. You know, a lot of people think, you know, aren't sure, did they claim him, did they want him, or were they blocking him from a trade somewhere else? But when they took it, the biggest contract in club history, so he better produce.
Yeah, I mean, he has some speed. He can play center. Just they've got to light a fire under him somehow. We'll be able to talk next week. This is kind of a key week for the Sox, too. Yeah, you know, which way they go, but we can talk next week more about it and the future of what they might do as far as deals. But it looks like we're about at the end of another show. It was a great show this week, guys. I'm Tom Morgan with Phil Rogers of the Tribune, Dave Hoekstra of the Sun-Times, and producer Dave Olson. We're on live every Wednesday morning from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time on TalkZone.com. And you can hear rebroadcast 24/7 on TalkZone.com. So thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week.